persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal presents the number 19 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker will be Mr. Raymond Cole.
What I want to do now is get right back to the subject of trials, tribulation, and persecution. And those dramatically change from time to time. I could get to be a little worried and concerned about taking a number of tapes or times dealing with a singular subject, except for the fact that the material changes so dramatically. And it affects us in very, very broad and comprehensive ways. So I think if we will very astutely apply ourselves to understand what is said and the abundance of material that God himself put in the Bible relative to these considerations, because trials and tribulation or persecution do not themselves transpire merely at designated periods of times, and other times we're free therefrom. We are subject to those influences on a day-by-day, moment-by-moment, even second-by-second consideration. We're being tried at every moment we breathe. Every awakened moment is in itself a very significant trial. And what we're doing is trying ourselves, or we're being tried, rather, individually, in relationship to certain responsibilities which God gave to us. And let's start with the overall fabric, which is basically the call itself, the call to fulfill the will of God, just to do obediently the will of God. And then from there it goes into specific areas. And those specific areas do affect us individually. Well, the last time we were dealing with the subject, or the word rather, tzar, T-Z-A-H-R, and we were down to the subtopic, or the fifth point of this, concerning the righteous, what is the value of tribulation? So there has to be some value so far as the trials or tribulation or the experiences which we go through. No, pardon me, we had already gone past that. We were down to the sixth point, which is the fate of the enemies of God's people. What happens now to those that may be responsible for creating some of the trials and experiences you go through? God may even allow them to become thorns in your side. But what happens to any of those who ultimately become your enemies? Now, God does not compel them to do it. They become that because of their own natures and because of their own wills, what they want to do. God forces no one to become an adversary. An adversary is one who chooses to do that because that's the way he wants to go. But then God expressly allows that individual who manifests this defective character to become an obstacle to you, a thorn in your side, a unique problem. And how you respond to that is what God is judging day by day. Now, all of us falter and fail when trials and difficulties become rather complex and adverse. We, philosophically, one of the key areas is the frustrations that we go through mentally. Philosophical means mental outlook. And so mentally we're struggling, or we're fighting certain complexities or unique problems. And God allows those things to come about. Now, what is it that exerts influence upon us? The philosophy of other people. Well, then, if it's the philosophy of other people, you have to have an absolute premise so that you can evaluate and judge all things, do you not? The answer is yes. And what is it? Well, that's why it's so frequently called in the Bible a trial of your faith. And what is that faith? The faith once delivered. All right? And what is the faith then that was once delivered? It is the doctrine, the absolute way of life that God gave to us. God is not going to judge anybody to whom he has not originally given a knowledge and understanding of that absolute way of life. And once we have been given a knowledge of that, then he is going to judge us from there on. Because he is evaluating day by day how we deal with those situations in relationship to that absolute. But now the point is at the present time to determine how the enemies of God's chosen people are going to be judged. How is God going to deal with them? And what is the fate of the enemies of God's people? So last time, if you can recall that far back, because that was long ago, we had concluded with Deuteronomy 33 and verse 7. Just so that you have a pickup verse and you can tie it with your previous notes. Now we want to go to Joshua 5 and read verses 13 and through 15. Joshua the 5th chapter. And it is my fond hope today, so that I don't protract this thing beyond all reasonable expectation, that I can move through it and more summarize than to take the time on each individual text. So here in Joshua the 5th chapter, let's notice verses 13 through 15. And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, Art thou for us or for our adversaries? The term our adversaries here is this word tzar, T-Z-A-H-R. Now he asked the question. Here was obviously an angel, and he said, Are you for us or are you for our adversaries? Who are you, in other words? And he said, Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord. So here is a unique situation, brethren, and it is really my expectation that you're going to experience some of these circumstances where you're probably going to see the very host of the eternal on occasions between now and the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, that's going to be one glorious experience for us initially. Anyway, well, let me not just say initially, each time it happens. We have not had anything like that I know of in our lives within the framework of God's church. But let me assure you, there are days coming when, because of our keen enemies, that God is going to supernaturally intervene, and the Lord's host is there for that purpose. If you will remember, a significant portion of the first chapter of Hebrews explains the purpose for the creation of angels. Angels are your servants. They're there doing their work day by day. You just don't see them. Now, we have faith and we have confidence. Because of that faith and that confidence, they don't have to manifest themselves to us. But the day is coming when people who have no respect for the supernatural are going to have to see their adversaries. And in this case, they're going to be adversaries because they are opposed to them. That is, the people who are opposed to the people of God are going to have adversaries who will be the faithful servants of the people of God. And they are going to be against them, because they are against, of course, what is right. So here was a situation where God supernaturally intervened. And Joshua, as a servant of the Eternal, raced over and said, Well, now just who are you? Are you for us or are you for our adversaries? And he said, Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord. Now, does that mean this was Gabriel? There is every possibility that what Joshua literally talked to Gabriel. If Gabriel were the other archangel or cherub that covers, you know, Lucifer was one of them. That we know, because he was called one of the cherub. But there were only two cherubs. Only two cherubs of that position. I don't say there are only two cherubs. There probably are many cherubim. But there were two that held significant positions. It seems that we know one had to be Lucifer, because he's called that cherub. The other one, by implication or indication, was probably Gabriel. And is it now, or Michael, I don't know which the case would have been, but, you know, Michael is going to stand up on the behalf of Israel in the last days. Now, which one assumed a post, perhaps? Well, really, the post has not been vacated. So I can't say right now, does Gabriel supersede Michael, or does Michael supersede Gabriel? Might be a good question to check. I really do not know. But those are two awesome personages that are your servants. All angels, including archangels and cherubim and seraphim, are your servants. Servants of the righteous people of God. Now, you didn't, you know, we don't sometimes think of the protectors that we have out there. Thousands, millions of them. And power such as you can little comprehend, they possess. They're your protectors. They're your servants. Now, you can't dictate them to them, and you can't abuse them. You know why? Because you have not yet assumed your rightful position, which is, you know, a son is born ultimately to take over or to be become a part of the business of his father. That's normally true, isn't it? But you're under tutors right now. So the servants that are over you, who happen to be angels, have charge over you right now. You don't dictate to them. But there's a day coming when you will. There's a day coming when you will. But anyway, at this particular time, then, Joshua was very concerned, because here appeared a servant of the eternal God. And he knew that it was a different set of circumstances. So he said, "Nay, but as captain of the host of the Lord." Now, I want to tell you, I don't know what I'd do. My knees would, well, what was it that happened, you know, to these people in biblical times? Their knees turned to water, and they smote one another and so on. Don't you think for one minute it wouldn't happen to you? If all of a sudden Gabriel stood in your midst or before you, you know, you wouldn't know whether to spit, flutter, or fly. And you probably would do all of them. So here was possibly Gabriel. I really do not know. It would obviously, I think, had to be either Gabriel or Michael. Captain of the host of the Lord, am I now come? And Joshua fell on his face to the earth. I don't blame him. And worshipped and said unto him, what saith my Lord unto his servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy. And Joshua did so. So he was willingly obedient. But here was the captain of the angelic host, who really are servants of all of God's chosen people. And yet at the present, we're under tutelage. So therefore, we are but the children growing up, ultimately to assume our inheritance. So anyway, here was one who came because there were adversaries. Remember, the reason for which this host appeared is because Joshua and the children of Israel were in deep trouble. And they appeared to take care or to resolve that problem. So remember that if God did it in the days of ancient Israel, he's the same today, yesterday, today, and forever. And he is not partial in his dealings. So if you are the children of God today and you have that faith, the whole host of God can appear to take care of a situation for you. Why do we live in fear? All because of the weakness of our faith. How deficient in faith are we? You know, if he could absolutely obliterate whole armies in times past, why do we worry about local governments and all these other things that go on in the world today? God is only allowing it for a transitory period of time because he expects us to learn some object lessons out of it. In other words, he intends for us to become obedient insofar as it does not defy the will of God. Men ought always to obey God. And then beyond that, to be obedient to men in responsible positions. So if now we are confronted with a circumstance or a situation where our lives are being threatened, we stand in jeopardy because of even the Supreme Court or the legislative department or the executive department of the government of the United States or of the governments of all the world, why do we stand in fear and trepidation when the host of heaven is for us if we have faith and if we have confidence? It's a matter of faith. Next, brethren, I want us to notice 1 Chronicles 12, verses 16 through 18. 1 Chronicles 12. And then let's begin in verse 16. Was here in the Bible. And there came of the children of Benjamin and Judah to the hold unto David. And David went out to meet them, and answered and said unto them, If you be come peaceably unto me to help me, mine heart shall be knit unto you. But if you be come to betray me to mine enemies. You know, it is an amazing thing how people usually for economic or political position will betray somebody else. But, you know, so many thoughts race through my mind because we're talking about enemies, but let's talk about this matter of betrayal for a moment. You know, it's amazing how we betray one another almost daily by saying things that we do or behaving as we do. We've got to master those traits. Because God does not look kindly upon any betrayal whatsoever. You know, one of the things that has finally dawned on me, and let's say for the last 6 months at least, because I can conscientiously say before you today that as never before, and I think I've been sincere and interested in times past, but as never before, I am going to have the character of Jesus Christ because it's been promised. And one of the things I abhor and hate most is the constant talking about others. It isn't necessary. We do not need to talk about others. Why don't we just, if we want to discuss things, let's always involve ourselves. We can talk about ourselves if we want to. Be objective. But where we implicate somebody else, we better be careful because we're probably liable. And you know the Bible does not say for naught. Study to be quiet. You know why? Because the Bible also says that in much speaking there wanteth not sin. If we feel that we have to fill up time with speaking, rest assured that probably at every breath you're sinning. So sometimes it's just a whole lot better to just keep the mouth shut. And I have found it so. It just pays handsome dividends. Now there are responsibilities. And in the discharge of responsibilities, obviously, words have to be used. But be discreet. And be careful, be judicious. But above all, let us not be betrayers. And you can avoid that by just simply avoiding talking about or implicating others in any way. Now, the only time that you should mention somebody is if you want to favorably mention them. Go ahead and talk about everybody you want to when it's on a positive note, because there won't be any problem there. But if it is negative, maybe you better reassign the responsibility or make sure it goes to the party that should become involved or go directly to the individual or whatever course of action needs to be taken. But above all, lateral moves are never acceptable. And by lateral moves, I mean telling somebody else who can't do any more about it than you can do. Then don't do it. Just don't be involved in it. So here was a situation, and David looked at him and said, "Now why have you come? Because you are my enemy, and because you want to betray me, or because you want to befriend me?" So, you know, when someone comes and wants to know what you know, and they want to know everything that you know, you have to ask a question. Because you want to betray me, or because you want to be knit to me in love and affection? Which? What's the purpose behind it? And you know, when we ask those questions, and when we see the literal fulfillment thereof, it's going to seal our mouths more often than not. So David said, went out to meet this commission or this group that was appearing, this delegation. And David went out to meet them and answered and said unto them, "If you become peaceably unto me to help me, mine heart shall be knit unto you. But if you become to betray me to mine enemies," and the term "mine enemies" here is the word tsar, "seeing there is no wrong in my hands, the God of our fathers look thereon and rebuke it." You're going to pay the consequence. Then the Spirit came upon Amasai, who was chief of the captains, and he said, "Thine are we, David, and on thy side, thou son of Jesse, peace. Peace be unto you, and peace be to your helpers, for your God helps you." Then David received them and made them captains of the band. So in other words, there was an agreement. And they understood that they were there for the right purpose. But notice what would have transpired had it been enemies. But there are always two factors in these situations. They're enemies, enemies for what reason, but enemies to whom? These are the factors we need to very significantly weigh. Enemies to whom? Well, oftentimes they're enemies to themselves, and then we might have asked the question, how are they enemies? Merely because they may be relaying information. They may not have attempted to take life whatsoever, but they merely may have been betrayers by conveying information to someone else. Now, above all, brethren, God has no respect for that kind of thing. Therefore, if we resorted to that, even though we sustain God's truth right now, and we were to send enemies into the camps of other peoples for the purpose, no other purpose than to get information back, we are culpable. I'm not interested in it. If God wants us to have information, God can send it. And we have left it that way. What we need always comes. We get it. To understand. But could you possibly develop the right character and fulfill the purposes that are acceptable, not only acceptable, but mandatory in the sight of God, and become a betrayer in the camp of somebody else? You couldn't do it. It would not be honorable and would not be acceptable. So remember, what we're talking about is the fate of the enemies of God's people. God knows his own. And it is the people who turn to politics, who turn to the machinations of this world, who become surreptitious and hateful, who do all that they can to uncover, to abuse and to take advantage of others. God is going to have a day of reckoning, and they're going to pay a price. But make sure that we do not become involved in the same thing. So there are indubitably enemies who have attempted to get information, who may have even individually exploited you. They want to talk to you. And they'll feign all the interest in the world. But they ask the right questions to get the answers they want. And then do they simply say, but the purpose of God is such that I dare not reveal these secrets. I shall hide them within my own minds. No, they take them to somebody else. Now they're going to pay the price. The enemies of God's people will always pay a price, ultimately. Next, I want us to notice Psalms 27. Psalms, the 27th chapter. And noting verses 2 and 12. I'm going to skip over a lot of this. I'd like for you to read from verses 1 through 14, because it's very, very interesting information. And we find it in context here. But time is such that I don't want to consume it now by reading the text here so that we can get the setting. I'll try to give it to you. In Psalms 27 and verse 2, when the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes. Now remember, David said that he was absolutely consistently plagued with betrayers and enemies. And so he said, when the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh. Now, not literally. I don't think they'd turned to cannibalism yet, but what they were intending to do was to take advantage, verbal advantage, and as well as advantage by reporting what was going on. They were reporting it back to take advantage, to abuse him in the sight of the people, or to stir up other people against him. In many cases, his own sons were stirred up against him. So when the wicked, even mine enemies, and as he said, they were among his own household, and my foes came upon me to eat up my flesh, that is, to destroy him. And you know, you can destroy a man much more quickly by destroying the mental fabric than you can by just taking a bite out of his flesh. That'll heal. But sometimes to destroy a man mentally and emotionally is the most devastating, horrifying thing that can happen. You erode confidence people have in him. You destroy a relationship with other people. Your intent is deliberately calculated to set other people against that individual. And how frequently we are involved in that kind of thing. It goes on so often that it scarcely deserves any mention. Because when we talk to other people, what is the intent and the purpose? When we say things about other people, do we ask why? Is it not generally to convey to those people a certain distrust for that other individual? To turn people against another party? That's the common thrust. It's the basic intent. If it were not, then, pray tell, why did we say it? Because it became our responsibility to reveal all things. I thought Jesus Christ was going to do that. There is a day of reckoning, a day of revealing coming, but that's going to come from Jesus Christ. It seems to me the Bible says of us that our responsibility is to hide a matter. It is for that reason, brethren, that I have not wanted to become involved. I know what the Bible says, and from the beginning, I never did want to become involved in the writing of the sins of all these other people. And everyone who has done so has become involved in litigation and unique problems. They're all squabbling and fighting constantly. And I think I can safely say that there are no people on the face of the earth they wouldn't like to implicate more than they would you and me. I've heard by the indirect vine, grapevine, that there is an awesome fear for you. They know that you know, and they know what the truth is, and they know you're still there. That makes you doubly dangerous. Because you are not willing to enter into that kind of garbage, mudslinging. And therefore, it makes you unusually dangerous to their ends. You analyze it and think it through. So he said then, here in Psalms 27 and verse 2, when the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Now that's what's going to happen to all of them. The enemies of God's people will always falter, ultimately. Now notice verse 12. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies. Here is the prayer of David, and of course it's a matter of praying. It is not an automatic or spontaneous thing. It's a matter of our petitioning God regularly. And when we petition God, he hears our prayers. And one of our petitions is that we should never be delivered into the slippery, slimy, snaky hands of enemies. For false witnesses are risen up against me. And don't think for one minute it will never happen to you. False witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. But our prayer is that we should be delivered. Now there will come a time when some are going to have to be subjected to these trials and these experiences. And they're going to be overcome by them until they refine and purify their robes and make them white. But brethren, if we can do it on a day-by-day basis, because we have willed for mastery in our personal lives, and I'm not talking about always tomorrow we're going to do better. I'm talking about the day when we begin, and there is going to be marked change. We're going to live up to the truth of God because we're going to be judged by it. If we'll do that, brethren, don't kid ourselves. For kidding oneself is the sorest of difficulties. To delude oneself and then fall prey to the very thing that you thought you were going to escape is hard to take. But to effect the necessary mastery, and we know what it is, God has laid out the responsibilities. Brethren, look to find out what God expects you. I don't mean in the general fabric. Surely, that is also essential, where we're going to live by certain basic principles. But we are all called, and there is a stratification of responsibility here on this earth. And God himself is the author of it. And much of your responsibility lies in distinct relationship to that stratification of responsibility. What's all of the violence and the turmoil in the world about today except a hate and contempt for that very stratification of responsibility? Why do you think we have an ERA? Why do you think we have a civil... what's the term I'm looking for? I can't even think of it right now. In other words, the conflict between colored and white at the present time. Why do you think it exists? Because I'm opposed to the colored people? No, I love them deeply. But because God Almighty ordained a certain thing. And it is that middle wall of partition that's created all these unique problems. The fighting, the anger, the agitation that is going on. And that can be broken down by Jesus Christ only. The world is going to try to amalgamate the races, and it isn't going to work. They're going to get kicked right in the teeth, and then every time they dabble with it, they're only going to be hurt the more. But there is a day coming when God is going to intervene through the spiritual purpose so that it doesn't make any difference whether we're Gentile, Israelite, whether we're bond free, or what we are. We're all going to be made one in Jesus Christ. Therefore, when we understand God's truth and assume our physical responsibilities as God ordained them, we can have peace today. But if we're going to fight against them, we'll never have peace. I don't make any difference within God's church whatsoever. It thrills me to see anybody come that will come. But I'll tell you, when we start fighting within the church, the same political battles that exist on the outside, all we have made is the Church of God another political arena. And we're going to get hit and cut in pieces when we do that kind of thing. It will not work. So, brethren, if we want peace, peace comes because we understand the assignment of God. We may not understand all the reasons. I had no choice in the matter. I was born, I guess, so far as I know, an Israelite. But other people are born Gentiles of one type or another. But thank God they can all be made a part of the Commonwealth of Israel through Jesus Christ. And when that happens, it means all of the normal anger, resentment, fight that we have seen manifested throughout the centuries ought to be suppressed by the power of God's Holy Spirit. Why? Now, can we not accept positions? Can we not accept responsibilities? God's the author of them. And peace is in relationship to that. When we talk about the truth of God very distinctly has stratification. And we must understand that. So, all the problems that came to pass in the case of David were that they were trying to unseat, undermine him. In other words, there were people, including they of his own household, who never accepted him as the ruler of Israel. Why? Because several of his own sons rose up against him and they wanted to become king. Now, it came as a curse to David, because of some failures on his part. And God said that there were going to be they of his own household who would plague and trouble him all of his days. And that's why he said that his enemies were they of his own household. He knew that because he was told so by God. But now he said specifically, and God, despite the fact that David experienced these things his whole lifetime, yet prayed to God, and God delivered him his full lifetime. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies. Don't let them have an advantage over me. For false witnesses are risen up against me. Here was how they were going to take advantage of him. They were going to generate what they wanted said. And they were going out and say it. They knew it wasn't true. But after all, they say in politics, anything goes. So what they did is they generated false witnesses. They went out deliberately circulating evil, odious, bad information to hurt the credibility of the man himself. Why else would you have a false witness? What's the purpose behind it? To destroy the man, to destroy his integrity, to destroy the relationship with the people, and if at all possible, to destroy his own internal relationship, because you know, if you hear it long enough, you can even begin to believe it yourself. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. Next, I want you to notice Psalms 97. Psalms, the 97th chapter. And let's read verse 3. You read verses 1 through 12, and you'll get the entire setting. But I'm going to read verse 3. A fire goes before him and burns up his enemies round about. Now, if you get it in its setting, you'll find that we're talking about the second coming of Jesus Christ. Here now is the indication of a fire, which may not be a literal fire, or it can also be a literal fire, that is going to issue forth and is going to burn up all the adversaries, including the false witnesses, those who willfully do those things contrary to the truth of God, and burns up his enemies round about. Enemies here is the word tsar. Now, how many of us in the day of final reckoning and the judgment of God will be classed as enemies? Here's the fate of him. What a tragedy. Isaiah 1 now and verse 24. Isaiah 1 and let's note verse 24. You read verses 21 through 27. Once again, you'll get it in setting. Therefore saith the Lord of hosts, the mighty one of Israel, Ah, I will ease me of mine adversaries and avenge me of mine enemies. Mine adversaries is the word tsar, T-Z-A-H-R. And he says, I'm going to ease me. What is he going to do? There's going to be a final reckoning, a judgment. He's going to rid himself of all of his enemies. So the ultimate end for those who become the enemies of God's purpose, and the real enemies of God's purpose, are always those who once knew and understood. Other people have an opportunity coming. But it is interesting that even in the book of Daniel, you'll notice that somebody who knew, who understood the Holy Covenant, because of advantage, political advantage, are going to use, will use flatteries in that day to reveal the secrets of the true servants of God. It means somebody who worked from inside, who knew you, who knew your location, who knew what you believed. Why? Because they believed it at one time. They know it perfectly. Satan has always, in the ultimate analysis, and it is a trick of his as old as society itself. Sure, he has the whole world under his control, but the ultimate control, the impetus that will be given in the last days, will come from within. Somebody who knew and understood. It is strange that in the days of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and so on, in the development of that great Babylonian system at that time, that really it was given little impetus and a little force until finally the very people of God, physically, the nation of Israel, well, actually, I shouldn't say the nation of Israel, the progenitors of the nation of Israel, the people that came through the very people God himself had chosen at that time, were the ones that gave impetus to it, according to Dorothy Ruth Miller in her book, Light in Ancient History. And she said that whatever impetus was given to the Babylonian structure back at that time, it was minimal by comparison to what transpired in the days when finally Shem, the people of Shem, took over and expanded it. The same thing is true in the days of the children of Israel. Sure, they were over there doing their nefarious things and so on, until finally they sold it to Judah and to Israel. And Judah and Israel, as the Bible itself said, did worse than all their enemies. The same thing is true, brethren, of the Church of God of the first century. They had all of their various religious affiliations, groups, scattered all over the face of the earth. They were doing their own thing in the day that Jesus Christ came and established the truth of God. But it was not until Satan finally gained a control within that physical body of that church, and the vast majority of them turned away, forming the very catalyst for the most notorious departure ever. And those are recorded as history for our day. Why? Because the same thing is going to happen in our day. It's going to happen from within. It did happen. And it's only going to become more serious as the days go on. So he said here in the final analysis at the return of Jesus Christ, because we're talking about the intervention now of Jesus Christ here, where he said, Therefore saith the Lord, the Almighty, the Lord of hosts, the mighty one of Israel, Ah, I will ease me of mine adversaries and avenge me of mine enemies. So he's going to take care of the matter, which means there are some who are calculated enemies of Christ. And they're going to be taken care of. Isaiah, the 5th chapter, verses 28 and 30, and you read from 20 through 30 to get the entire context. Isaiah 5, verses 28 and 30. Whose arrows are sharp, and all their bows bent, their horses' hoofs shall be counted like flint, and their wheels like a whirlwind. In other words, we're talking about a great array or an army in the last days. Now notice what he says about it here in verse 30. And in that day, which is this, it's a term that is used repeatedly in the Bible, always implying the dark, gloomy, dark, foreboding day of the day of the Lord, which is a rather encompassing period of time. And in that day they shall roar against them like the roaring of the sea. And if one look unto the land, behold darkness and sorrow, and the light is darkened in the heavens thereof. The term like flint up here in the initial verse, and then also the term sorrow down here in verse 30 is the same. These are the same words. The term like flint, whose arrows are sharp and all their bows bent, their horses' hoofs shall be counted like flint. In other words, meaning it's the word sar, meaning you know, as a hoof is put down on a solid surface with a horse's shoe on, you know how it'll churn or stir up the soil. I mean, it'll chip away even at a pavement or whatever. So is the nature of trial or tribulation. It's like flint that is going to chip away. It's going to hammer, and we're either going to be made by it or destroyed by it, whichever the case may be. Then in verse 30 it says, and in that day they shall roar against them like the roaring of the sea. And if one look unto the land, behold darkness and sorrow. Tribulation, anxiety, pain. And the light is darkened in the heavens thereof. This is the net result. The trial and the persecution that's going to come upon those who originally persecuted you, who troubled you, who became the enemies of the cause of Christ. Next, I want you to notice Isaiah, the 9th chapter. Isaiah 9. And let's note verse 11, but you read almost the whole chapter, verses about 8 through 21. Chapter 9 and verse 11. Therefore the Lord shall set up the adversaries of reason against him and join his enemies together. In other words, God, in this case, because reason, remember, was from Assyria, I believe, if I remember the whole story here, the king of Assyria. Now God was going to join the enemies together against, that is, their enemies together in order to reduce them. So if one becomes the enemy of God, even though he himself is an enemy of somebody else, God is going to collectively use human beings sometimes to reduce the enemies that are opposed to those who love and respect and honor him. So in this case, reason was going to well up and he was going to take advantage over Israel and interfere in this particular regard. But God was not going to permit it, because what he said here was that he would join his enemies together, and in that way they would present a united front, and they would not afford then reason to take over, to manipulate, to bring to pass whatever their desire was. So God then can even use physical enemies outside to turn around and destroy the enemies of his own people. In other words, we may have all kinds of enemies out here that dislike us, but in the final analysis, God can stir them up and they'll destroy one another. So God has many, many ways of taking care of those situations. Next, I want you to notice Isaiah 26, verses 11 and 16. You read through verses 7 through 11. Isaiah, the 26th chapter, verses 11 and 16. Lord, when thy hand is lifted up, they will not see. But they shall see and be ashamed for their envy at the people. Yea, the fire of thine enemies shall devour them. Now here once again is God turning the whole thing around, and it's self-inflicted. Notice what he said. When thy hand is lifted up, they will not see, but they shall see and be ashamed for their envy at the people. Yea, the fire of thine enemies shall devour them. So, and what they're doing is turning around and devouring one another. This means, really, and which is characteristic of people that have this kind of frame of mind and attitude. Anybody who transgresses their expectation, what they want or what they desire, is definitely going to become an enemy, even though they may have been close friends before. That's why he said, he who destroys by the sword shall be destroyed by the sword. The reason for that is that always that kind of behavior precipitates like behavior. And so people who have trampled upon others to gain supremacy within the framework of the enemies of the Lord or within their purposes are creating their own personal enemies, and many of them. Well, brethren, the same thing is true within the church, except somehow we have enough character to withstand it. But when somebody tramples on us, what do? The same thing anybody else does. We react, don't we? That's the thing that God wants us ultimately to master. Because if we react favorably only when all the conditions are favorable, we have to ask the question, don't all other people? The only time we produce the character of God is when we react favorably, even when the circumstances are unfavorable. And that God expects. More and more and more, I'm trying to grasp the emotional character of Jesus Christ. Just reading and understanding how he behaved, how he reacted. And you know, it's absolutely dumbfounding. And how he scarcely ever, except at propitious moments, and every time he expressed it as a need for the purpose of for which he was sent, that he reacted or he indicted or whatever. Because remember, he was commissioned to come down and indict also, and therefore he did. But in the normal response of life, he always absorbed and never retaliated. That's Christ, the Son of God. He never retaliated. So we need to be very, very careful that we emotionally react correctly and that we do not injure or hurt others by our response. Let's manifest the character of God. Now, I'm going to have to conclude because we have now, I think, just about 54 minutes according to my watch here. So we'll pick it up from that point the next time and continue to understand this matter of the fate of the enemies of God and what's going to happen in such circumstances. We really need to understand these things. And then when we get into the New Testament, as I said, I'm going to give you a very comprehensive, broad coverage to show you how those same things apply in the spiritual application through the writings of Jesus Christ, or that is the speaking of Jesus Christ, or the writings of the apostles.
Persecution, Trial, and Tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the number 19 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker has been Mr. Raymond Cole.